The world paused in uncertainty for a few moments today. It was just 6:10 tonight when the news was given to the world that President Roosevelt had slept away. News that stunned and suspended in immobility for minutes the whole country, the whole world. Millions of men and women stopped stock still, unbelieving, when the news came. In many a home and restaurant here in the East, the evening meal went untouched, while an unbelieving citizenry tried to say it wasn't so. Veteran reporters at the White House wept unashamed. A cab driver said what was in many minds, "I wonder what will happen to us, what it will mean to us, I wonder." In a canteen at a far outpost in the Pacific, a young lieutenant came in, white-faced, to tell a group of sailors that the commander-in-chief was dead. The reaction was the reaction of the unbelieving world. They said, "It isn't so, it's a rumor." Yes, there was a pause of uncertainty throughout the world that knew Franklin Delano Roosevelt so well. The freedom of man had lost one of its staunchest champions. Fascism had lost one of its most implacable foes. It wasn't easy to take. For those few moments when the world learned, it was impossible to understand. But then, as men turned their faces once again to life, having looked on the face of death almost as if it were the death in the family, perhaps the first question that rose to most minds was, what shall we do now? The details were beginning to accumulate by that time. Mrs. Roosevelt had spoken in the quiet of the White House to Steve Early and Admiral McIntyre. She had spoken calmly, looking into the future as we all were at that moment. "I am more sorry for the people of the country and the world than I am for us," she said. And then she sent a message to her children, their sons on the far battlefields. "Your father slept away this afternoon. He did his job to the end, as he would have you do. Bless you all and all our love." Vice President Truman had come to the White House by that time, pale and shaken. He had gone in to see the First Lady, asking like a neighbor who loves, whether it be in Missouri or Maine or California or the East or the West or that which lies between, "What can I do?" the old question of the neighbor. And Mrs. Roosevelt had replied, "But tell us what we can do. Is there any way we can help you?" Well, here were familiar things coming up, the familiar tendernesses that tragedy brings among those of goodwill, the little things that were beginning to come to help the living to live on. I think we, too, shook ourselves then and repeated, "He did his job to the end as he would have you do. What can we do to help you?"
This is W.W. Chaplin at Allied Supreme Headquarters in Paris. First news of President Roosevelt's death in the United States was conveyed to the American ambassador to France, Jefferson Caffery, by General de Gaulle personally. The leader of the French provisional government telephoned the American ambassador. He said that he just received the news by telephone direct from Washington. De Gaulle expressed his deep regret. And here's what Ambassador Caffery said. This is a quote. "I am shocked more than I can say," he said. "It's a terrible loss, not only for our country and for me personally, but for all humankind." At Firo's fashionable nightclub in the heart of Paris, the master of ceremonies made the announcement as soon as he was informed of the news. The program was immediately interrupted. There was a minute of silence, and then the place was closed. That was general in Paris. GIs gathered as usual at the Red Cross Rainbow Corner in the heart of Paris. They wouldn't believe the news at first. They heard it indirectly by word of mouth, but then it was confirmed. MVs in their jeeps heard it over their radio sets on announcements from headquarters. All the men took the announcement pretty hard. "G," said one GI, and he had to go before seeing a victory. This is W.W. Chapman returning you to the NBC newsroom in New York.
The National Broadcasting Company has rearranged its entire program schedule. All commercial programs have been canceled.
And here, ladies and gentlemen, in the NBC newsroom in New York, is once again Don Hollenbeck.
It seemed almost as if time and events must stand still in the stunning shock of this afternoon's news from Warm Springs, the death of President Roosevelt. As Will Hayes has just said, a war casualty as certainly as any soldier killed in battle. Of course, the news services have carried no other news since. But before the grievous blow fell this afternoon, events had been in the making that seemed to bring Franklin Delano Roosevelt's dream very near. High staff officers of our army told Senate leaders this afternoon that organized resistance in Germany would come to an end in a very few days. They were so sure of that fact that orders have already gone out to cut sharply the shipments of durable equipment to Europe. That statement, that decision, was probably one of the very last that President Roosevelt authorized as commander-in-chief. And Goebbels himself tonight, whose German radio sneered at Roosevelt even in death. Goebbels admitted that in his opinion, the war couldn't go on much longer. As Goebbels said, the German nation has sunk very low. How right he was. Probably the news had reached the president that our armies are in the home stretch for Berlin. Only this afternoon came the report that the 9th is well across the Elbe River and probably within 49 miles of the German capital, although a strict security blackout prevents the actual progress of the army from being told. Radio Paris said tonight that Allied parachute troops had landed at Brandenburg, only 20 miles from the German capital. But this, of course, is absolutely without official confirmation. And to the east, Moscow radio tonight reports savage fighting west of the Oder near Berlin. No doubt the concerted grand assault by all the Allies, the one good heave altogether to end the war in Europe. The 1st and 3rd armies are still rolling at the latest report about 15 miles from Leipzig. Weimar fell today. That news came early. Maybe the president had heard that the birthplace of the abortive German Republic in 1919 fell to the 80th Division without firing a shot. Direct defiance of Himmler's order just today that all German towns must be defended to the death.
Good evening. This is Robert St. John in the NBC newsroom in New York. President Roosevelt is dead. Of course, you have already heard the tragic news. But it will take hours, days, for what happened at 4:35 p.m. today at Warm Springs, Georgia, to sink in. The tragedy of it is that Mr. Roosevelt did not live to see the final victory in this war, which he had had so much to do with bringing about, and the creation of a permanent peace organization, which he also dreamed so much of. But he did live to read bulletins this morning indicating that the final collapse of all organized resistance by the Nazis is only a matter of days. Mr. Roosevelt had been for 2 weeks at Warm Springs, the place he loved as much as any other spot in America, the place where he recovered from infantile paralysis, the place where, through his interest, thousands of others have recovered from infantile paralysis. During those 2 weeks, the president had attended closely to the affairs of state which weighed on him so heavily, but he was not well. He was well suntanned, but he was not well. Those who saw him the last few days say that he looked thin and haggard. Mrs. Roosevelt herself said that she thought that the president looked much too thin. For the past few days, he complained that food had no taste for him. For the past few days, he'd been eating only gruel. But today, he tried valiantly to go about his affairs. He spent the morning at his desk in the little white house at Warm Springs on top of Pine Mountain. At 1 o'clock, he was sitting for a portrait when he suddenly complained of a very severe headache. Commander Howard Bruin, a naval physician assigned to watch over the president, was called. He got there in a very few minutes, but the president was already unconscious, and he never did regain consciousness. He died in that little white house on top of a mountain at 4:35 p.m. Apparently, the two doctors were the only ones present when death came. The news was immediately telephoned to Washington. Mrs. Roosevelt's first words were these: "I am more sorry for the people of this country and of the world than I am for us." And then she sat down and wrote that simple little note to her four sons. And then she prepared to leave by plane for Warm Springs. It was a little after 5:45 p.m. when switchboard lights went on in the Three Press Association offices in Washington. A voice said, "This is the White House, hang on." There was silence for several moments, and then another voice said, "This is Steve Early." The president's secretary paused a moment, and then he said, "Flash, the president is dead." In a matter of instants, bells began to ring on news machines in every radio station and newspaper office in the country. And then a story about today's triumphs of Allied military might in Europe was broken, and Steve Early's words were repeated, "Flash, the president is dead." Back in Washington, Vice President Truman was in his office on Capitol Hill when he got the news by phone. And the news that as soon as he took an oath of office, he would become the 32nd President of the United States. Incidentally, Mr. Truman took that oath of office about 15 minutes ago. When he got the news, his face went gray. He trembled for a moment, and then he jammed his hat over his head and rushed out. He didn't say where he was going, but he went directly to the White House. There, a little later, he announced, even before he took the oath of office, that he had asked President Roosevelt's cabinet to remain in office. He said he will attempt to carry on as he believed Mr. Roosevelt would have done. Incidentally, here's a bulletin. Let me interrupt myself. A bulletin from Washington. A bulletin which says that the State Department tonight announced that there will be no interruption of the San Francisco conference as a result of the death of President Roosevelt.
This is the NBC Newsroom in San Francisco. We bring you now NBC's noted news commentator and reporter of world affairs, Elmer Peterson.
Here in San Francisco, the news of the death of Franklin Delano Roosevelt came to us in the middle of the afternoon. It caused workmen to pause in their tasks. It caused pedestrians to stop, their faces pale with the shocking import of the news. Everywhere there was the silent tribute to the passing of a great leader. Already you have heard that tribute expressed in words from various parts of this nation, from persons who know that Mr. Roosevelt well. You have heard his life history reviewed, his achievements, the things he lived by, the things he worked for. Here in San Francisco, we have another thought as well. The thought of what the passing of President Roosevelt means for the future of the world and peace, the prevention of war. It is in this city, after all, that the United Nations shortly will gather to create an organization for world security. It was expected, it was a profound hope, that Mr. Roosevelt would be here for the opening of this conference, to endow it with his spirit, his confidence for the future. It would have been a great moment to have this man, who has guided us through war to the very verge of victory in Europe, to be present at a conference which was, after all, one of his hopes and aspirations. He would have come to San Francisco as one of the big three. He would have been identified with the great nations of the world. But his presence here would have been important also for the small nations of the world. In fact, as we reflect now with deep sorrow on the death of a great president, this coming conference here in San Francisco seems symbolic of what he stood for. The rights of the weak as well as the strong. The equality of all people. The striving to achieve a better world. Something else, too, in the sorrow here on the West Coast for these tragic news of today. That news comes as the war in Europe moves on to its victorious close. But here on the West Coast, we are constantly aware in our own way of that war yet to be won, the war against Japan. Here it is, after all, that we see the ships moving out to sea westward. Here we see the freed prisoners of war returning. Here we look out over the Pacific Ocean toward that great battleground where victory must still be achieved and where great problems for the future must be decided. A war and problems for which the leadership of Franklin Roosevelt was something to be relied upon. At this moment, those ships are still moving out to sea. The drive toward victory goes on. But the news that our wartime leader has passed away, yielding to a higher destiny than is ours to command, is a shadow over that war to the west. A shadow, too, over the conference, at which the nations of this world, large and small, will strive for a new world.
Mrs. Franklin D. Roosevelt today sent a brief message to her four sons in the armed services, telling them that their father was dead. She said, "The president slipped away this afternoon. He did his job to the end, as he would want you to do. Bless you all, and all our love." And later Mrs. Roosevelt added, "I am more sorry for the people of the country and the world than I am for us."
Now, ladies and gentlemen, the National Broadcasting Company takes you to Washington.
We're speaking to you directly from the press and radio room of the White House in Washington, D.C. The Honorable Harry S. Truman was sworn in this evening as President of the United States by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Harlan F. Stone, at exactly 9 minutes past 7 o'clock, about 2 minutes ago. Mr. Truman uttered the words, "I do," and became the 33rd President of the United States. The ceremony took place in the Cabinet Room of the White House, and attending that ceremony were members of the Cabinet and members of the Congress who had arrived here in the past hour and a half or so. As I told you, Harlan F. Stone administered the oath of office, and Harry S. Truman is now the 33rd President of the United States. Here in the press room of the White House, there are perhaps some 50 newsmen and radio men, all of them either working or running to telephones or trying to get to telephones to spread the news to the nation that about 2.5 minutes ago, Harry S. Truman became President of the United States, the 33rd President. At the present moment, there is no other vice president being elected to office or being assigned to office, and that office, as I understand it, will remain vacant for the president. Word has just reached me that Mr. and Mrs. Truman, I should say the President of the United States and his wife, have left the cabinet room and they are now in the main part of the White House. It's interesting to note that Harry S. Truman came here tonight as Vice President of the United States as a visitor. He is now making the White House his home.